Hello and welcome to the Golden Thread Conversations. I'm your host, Judy Murdoch, and today I am so happy to be welcoming Erica Cleveland as our guest. Let me just say a little bit about Erica. She is an artist, writer, and former art therapist. Her mission is to work with women at mid to late life transition whose roles and identities no longer fit and who urgently want to connect to their true selves. Since moving to DC from the East Coast, she started Transformative Healing Dolls. For the last 10 years, she has been leading healing doll workshops and exhibiting her healing dolls in the greater DC area and beyond. So Erica, welcome. I'm so happy to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here.
I have to say that in reading your introduction, so much of your work really resonates deeply for me. Because I am an older woman, I feel like I have been in transition since like I turned 50. It doesn't seem like the transition slowed down at all. And I'm a crafty person by nature, and I love to work with my hands. So your the transformative dowel work that you do and the dowels you create just have a natural appeal to me.
Well, it's wonderful to hear that. Well, I think we kind of teach what we need to learn. So when I started doing this, and I was also turning 50, and you know, the years before that, that's when I started doing the transformative healing dolls, you know. So I was really struck by that idea, and the dolls, you know, a lot of the metaphors that came up in my dolls really related to the idea of transition and transformation.
Yeah, there's just something really cool about somehow taking all of that, all of those feelings and kind of like all that inner stuff going on, and somehow like making it more physical.
Yeah, that's really true. And there's something about also having it in front of you then, having this three-dimensional version of whatever you've created that reflects back to you like a mirror, and gives you more information. And right when you make it, but then over time, when you look at it and you begin to get more information as things change, it's almost as if the doll changes as well, even though it looks really cool. The same.
Huh.
But I learn really things, cool thing. You know, in an ongoing way.
I can see that. I'm curious, how did you, you know, you went from, you know, it sounds like you had a career in art therapy, and kind of like, can you say a little bit more about what that transition was like for you, where you went from, I mean, I can definitely see commonalities between the two. So it's not like you decided to become like a, I don't know, an insurance auditor or something like that. That
would have been, no, I don't think there was any place for me in the insurance world.
No, me neither. But tell me sort of what were the strands and sort of, a little bit more about that process for you.
No, that's a good question. I'm still trying to answer myself and see what my relationship with the art therapy is now. Because in a way, I thought I was leaving it behind. When I went back to art school, I thought I was just going to be an artist and not be working with people in the same way, that I was going to just focus on my own process. But so I was working with different media back then. I was working with printmaking and some sculpture, painting, and I guess evolving towards sculpture, but the doll making didn't evolve until later. And I think it was something about the dolls, and like we were just saying, that interactive quality of them that almost just made me want to teach it or to share it, and also the people's reactions to the dolls. You know, it's there's something about it that, in a certain way, the way people can relate to the dolls that I make, but there's another dimension when they make their own doll.
Right. How was like, what was the initial inspiration for making a doll for you?
It's hard to remember now, but I think part of it was when I was sort of phasing out of being an art therapist, I was still connected with the art therapy world, and the art therapy world is beginning to be online. So we did different exchanges, and you know, there's something called artist trading cards that we did where you each make one.
Yeah,
it was kind of fun. And somehow I heard about this course where a woman, I think in Germany, was teaching a class about a journey where you make a doll and you go through these, and you make a map and you go through this whole like year-long journey.
Oh, wow.
And so I joined the class. Well, it wasn't really, she was just offering it for free. And then something happened and she became ill, or had somebody in the family became ill. So it never continued, but I made a doll. And then I sort of was very drawn to that process of making the doll. And then I also met somebody who was also taking the class, Barb Kobe, who was a doll maker and became kind of a doll making mentor for me. I took a class with her and she guides people through, now that it's a year long journey, the way she teaches it. But I think back then it was maybe 6 months or something. And it was a sort of a very deep internal process of making dolls as a way of coming towards growth.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. that really got me hooked, I think.
That's really cool. I was wondering, how's COVID? And I mean, COVID, and there's just so much going on this year. Has that changed your work or had an effect on your work?
I feel like it has in a way. I mean, I'm always focused working from an internal place, but something about COVID, it puts me even more into that place. And sometimes that has meant not creating so much, you know, feeling really? Kind of like just dealing with whatever is going on in my life or the day-to-day realities of it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, I mean, I've been looking back on the COVID period, I haven't really made that many dolls.
Oh, really?
But I've been doing a lot more painting.
Oh, cool.
And processing and also through a course I've been taking, sort of using painting as a way of connecting with emotions and a way of processing emotions. And it's become this painting process, which is really almost like a Rorschach, creating a messy background and then finding images in it, which is something I had done myself earlier. But I'm really finding I'm drawn to that as a discipline in a way, making these paintings, and then I'm often translating them into dolls. And I think some of them will translate into dolls years from now. Sometimes it takes me a while. Like one of my dolls one of the larger first dolls that I made, I had done a drawing, I think 30 years ago. And then I did a painting maybe 10 years ago. No. A long time ago. and then it became a doll. So it's, and I didn't understand the image. Sometimes I don't understand the image when I first make it, when it first comes up. And sometimes it takes me years to really understand what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think these paintings are like sort of deep dives into, you know, the unconscious or into dreams or whatever. And it's a lot of processing what's going on during COVID. There's one that I did that it's called the biter or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about like just that gripping, like just the sort of anxiety that can come up. And I just recently read that dentists are having, a lot of people are grinding their teeth so much that they're breaking their teeth. So some of these are kind of dark images that are coming out, you know, in this period.
I like that you go there, you know, because like one of the things that, like, I understand it, but it does, I don't find it helpful is when people are trying to be like really focused on like what's good and be grateful and gratitude and all that kind of stuff. And that I feel like it has its place, you know, like it's really, like, you know, we should look at those things. But I think too, like, I think you use that language, like the shadow side, right? That we need to, or it maybe needs not quite the right way to say it, but like to acknowledge and have compassion and integrate more.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about that, right?
Well, I mean, should I talk about the class I'm teaching now about that?
Sure, if you want to, that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been very fascinated with the idea of the shadow. And when I was an art therapist, I was really drawn to Jung's work and his work with archetypes, which I feel like my work is very connected with archetypes. And I can talk about that after, because But the shadow part of his work, it's really looking at what's underneath, what affects us that we don't realize a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And yes, like you say, you can't really kind of paint over it with pink, you know, can't paint pink colors over anything and think it's all going to go
away. That's an excellent way to say it. Yeah, I like
yeah.
that.
So it's been really interesting working with a shadow in this class. That's one thing that happened with COVID as well, because I had a bunch of workshops scheduled. And then because of COVID, I couldn't do the in-person workshops. And I had never done online workshops. And I'd sort of in the back of my mind thought, I want to do this. And then I said, okay, let me just do this. And so in May, I offered this shadow, working with your shadow.
I'm glad that workshop. You did. I'm really glad that you took it online.
Yeah, I'm really glad I did. And it was a big class. And I just was amazed with what came out. With women came
really?
To the class. People came like, just thinking, I really have to work on this. Like, I think part of it was because of the times we were, you know, in what things were like in May, you know, people were just struggling with a lot of issues.
Yeah,
they were struggling with things in their life, but also with that overlayer of, you know, COVID and all of the political situation.
Yeah.
So they came with these
lack of control.
Yes, exactly.
You know, all of those things are just so, you know, like, I think at the time we were told, what, like, it was like a temporary thing, right? 14 days, 21 days, something like that. And still, I think one of the hardest things about it has been, there's no like really like clear message that we're receiving, somewhat from the scientists, but they're learning too. And I think that's what makes everybody, at least for myself, it really makes me on edge.
Yeah, there's no certainty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the dance of the shadow too, I think, is the uncertainty, dancing with uncertainty. And it's something, and again, like, I think we teach what we need to learn, because I struggle with like surrendering and working uncertainty. But but I think it's kind of like we're in this dark night of the soul time.
Yeah, that's
right now. And dark night of the world even. And so that's what I've been coming to more and more, seeing how much we're in that kind of a time. And in a way, I took a class with a nun in Ireland who offered this webinar just to help people through COVID, and looked at it as we're living in our monasteries now. We're all in our own little monasteries or cloisters. And so it was really interesting to think about that. That's where I first, you know, I had thought of it this way, but her words of the dark night of the soul, dark night of the world, really helped me to see that. Mm-hmm. And so there's something about that, though, about when you get to like the place of feeling hopeless or rock bottom, where you can't really use your left brain anymore.
Right.
It just doesn't work.
That's right.
And so you have to go into that. Like, to me, a lot of my imagery is like underground, like going underground or going under the surface of the ocean, you know, kind of thing, where, you know, you can't really make mistakes, because there's no other way. You just kind of fumble your way around, and you find solutions that are sometimes more creative that you might never have thought of if you were trying to, you know, use your left brain.
I like that. No, I like that a lot. I think like the whole golden thread, you know, that sort of following it. I mean, that is it, you know, and I think I began to follow it because I ran out of options, and I could not logic my way out of it anymore. I couldn't like come up with like a new project or a new, you know, like some, you know, big sort of business project. That's usually the way I would address it, is like, oh, I'm going to do like a program or a class, or I'm going to, you know, do some initiatives. And then I'd put all my effort and energy into planning it out and doing it. But nothing appealed to me. You know, like I just looked at sort of what can I do? And it was just sort of like, you know, it was like the slate was blank. There was nothing there. And it's really scary, you know, when that happens.
Yeah, it is scary. Yeah. Yeah. You're just walking around in the fog, and all you can see is like your little step, next step.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But I like the idea of the golden thread. What made you think of that as a metaphor for you?
It was really cool. I actually was shown it by an ancestral guide. Where, I'm trying to remember the specific guide. You know, like I've done some work on ancestral healing where we look at our different ancestral lineages, like mother's 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 father, father's mother, father, father, that type of thing. And you go through and it's like meet with guides who are spirits of that particular lineage, who were last, I think the best way to say it would be most healthy, not living their lives through a lens of trauma. I think in a lot of ways, like the way I see them is they're very holistic and very connected to all things, which gives them that level of spiritual health. And this particular, I call them grandmothers and grandfathers, and this grandmother, interestingly enough, she, like the blessings of her, this lineage are midwifing. And one of the things that she emphasized to me, which was a bit of a surprise, was that as a midwife, you know, not only are you bringing new life into the world, which is usually how we think of being a midwife, quite often there's grieving involved because the child does not, you know, the child does not always live. The mother does not always live. You know, it can be a time of great grief and loss. And that's a really interesting way of hearing it. And for whatever reason, sometimes the guides will just show me an image. And in this particular piece, I saw like a piece of velvet with golden thread. And the golden thread said, follow the golden path. And I asked her for a little bit more information about, you know, what does this mean? And she said, I'd like you to create it, which I did. I did it with paper and with gold, like a gold thread. And she said, this is, you know, this is the path that you're on. You know, this is the path that you're on. And it's like the hero's journey. It is the best and highest use of your talents and gifts, you know, those that you have received from us. And although it will sometimes be frustrating and sometimes you won't, like, as you said, like you won't see anything but the next stitch in front of you. But she said it's the most fulfilling path, and it's the path, it's the one where at the end of your life you won't have regrets. You know, and I really, isn't it? I know, it's a really beautiful metaphor. And the thing I like about it too is just that, you know, the stitches can be pretty small, and, you know, all we see is like maybe a little glint of the gold, but we don't see too much ahead of it. And I think the other thing that about that is if we can't see too far ahead, it means, at least this is my case, that I can't logic, you know, I can't logic or think my way through it. I have to be in the unknown, and I have to have community. So I need to reach out to the ancestors and to all, you know, all that supports me. And one of the things behind these conversations that I'm having with you and I've had with other people, well, this is community, like we're creating community. And we're bringing like-minded, like-hearted people together. And I love to think that in addition to just having a great conversation and offering something an audience can really enjoy and be inspired by, that, you know, this maybe this will develop into something larger. Don't know.
You never hope what somebody hearing this at some point will hear and where, what path it will take them on. So there's, it's like, to me, it also, it's like a web. Because the sense of interconnections.
I see that too.
I like that. And I like the idea of the ancestors too. I think about that myself, and it's an interesting looking at my lineage, something I've been doing too.
It's really rich.
So for me, it's interesting that my mother, both my mother and my, my mother's mother and my father's mother have this traceable lineage back maternally, like five generations or something. and both of them have the only goes back to the grandfather who were either orphaned or so there's just this maternal lineage.
Nice.
And I've been, you know, discovering this recently and starting to do some artwork about it, some dolls. But one of the not direct, well, I mean, she's like a distant cousin or something, but on my mother's side, I discovered when I was talking to my, how did I hear about this? I guess I was talking to my mother about her, you know, the maternal lineage. Uh-huh. And then she said, maybe you could talk to my brother. My mother's from Germany. So I asked, emailed her brother, my uncle. And he said, oh, did you know that you have this ancestor who was a seer? Like she had a psychic
power. Oh, wow.
And cool. She was really well known in her time. Friederike Haufe is her name. And so I guess Jung wrote about her. He didn't write in a really positive way. But actually, no, that's not true. When I looked it up in Wikipedia, the quote about Jung wasn't so positive. But then when I looked into it further, mm-hmm. it was kind of misconstrued, like what Jung said.
Oh,
because
okay.
Even then there was a mistrust of somebody being able to,
yeah,
like she could keep the dead and she could predict the future and she could do all these things. And even in that time, she, you know, was kind of mistrusted. You know, she had a whole following of people, but then there was also
right. There was like a couple, like at that time, like kind of late 19th century, early 20th century, there was like some really interesting trends. So like on the one hand, there was like, you know, like sort of like turning psychology and that type of thing into like, you know, like a science, like something that's observable, provable, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But then there was also like this really strong, like spiritualist movement,
yeah,
you know, which is probably more what your grandmother was part of. And it was really strong. And those two strands probably, I would say probably in particular, like the more, you know, scientifically oriented were awfully uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it was something that maybe was united more before, and then it took off into two different directions.
Now, you're right. Oh, yeah.
No, I'm sorry. my family's over there talking. It's taking more and more their own separate paths. And maybe in some ways coming together now, too.
Yeah, I think so.
Like the work with, I've been interested lately in a woman, Sarah Payton's work. She wrote this book called Your Resonant Self. I don't know if you're familiar. But she brings together sort of neurological research and how the brain works and some of these understandings about, not necessarily spiritualism, but psychological truths. And
yeah,
it's interesting. So I think there's maybe is some reconnecting now of those.
I think
two.
You're right, and I like that. I'm glad that I guess I often think that if you start to get too far into like quantum physics and stuff like that, you start to realize that things are not nearly as cut and dried, you know, as you might think, and that. I know there's like some research that's been done for a while showing how generational trauma actually creates a physical imprint on our neurological structure.
Yes, and it goes back up to three generations.
So you're familiar with that.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that makes a lot of sense. You know, where I come from on that is because I do have a background in consumer social research, stuff like that. So observing statistics, all that. And at the same time, I'm very practical. And my come from has been that if ancestral healing and ancestral reverence, which is what I practice.
What was the second thing you said?
Reverence.
Yes.
Reverence, you know, and that's, I mean, just having a relationship with your ancestors, with, you know, however you want to, divide the world, you know, nature, human, not human, however you want to look at that. But it kind of goes back to what you had said about it's a web and, you know, the strands connect in all sorts of interesting ways. And it's an animist way of looking at things. So I don't know where I was going with this, but it's interesting.
I think so too. And I think it goes both ways, that we are can be healed by, and I like what you said yes. before about the ancestors, how you're trying to find the ones who are most evolved and mm-hmm. not currently dealing with trauma, but mm-hmm. but it can, we can also go back and, you know, meditate on them and help to heal what they've been through, right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Actually, there are rituals you can use to work with the well ancestors, the guides, and by working with them through your presence, you are able to heal the generations that come between you and the healthy guide, and you know, those generations can be healed and whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah,
it's really funny beautiful. How, you know, yesterday I was teaching my class, and then I videotape, and I was looking back at the videotape of the class, and I saw myself, and I thought, oh my God, I'm my grandmother. Like, it looked just like my mother's mother. It was so strange, you know, pictures I've seen of her when she was younger. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a shock, but it also felt good, because, you know, like, she is in me.
Previous
women are in. I've been thinking about how to make, haven't figured out technically how to do this yet, but I'm thinking about like making a Matryoshka doll, you know, those, like, wouldn't it be interesting to be able to represent in some way all the different ways in which we are inside each other?
You know? I love that.
That's then the question is, who would be on the outside? Who would be on the inside?
I think that's even a wonderful question. I will show you actually one of the exercises I did in the ancestral healing work. I don't know if you can see this or not. Trying to show it to you.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Okay. So this is my mother's ancestor. You can see she does look like a Matryoshka doll.
Yes.
That's how she appeared to me. And she's the very artistic, crafty maker ancestor who applauds all of everything I do that's creative. You know, she's always like, I love what you're doing. So I like that idea of one of the things I would like to do more of, and I'm trying to understand how that might look, is I would like very much to do more craft work, more artwork, and to do it as a form of, I don't want to use the word worship. Worship doesn't feel like the right thing, but perhaps ancestral reverence, which is where we were going. Yeah. I think that's where I'm coming from, is how to use it a little bit more formally in ways like, for example, maybe dedicating a craft project to the ancestors, or I don't know. I'm just, that's something I'm playing with right now.
Well, it's something that we're in parts of the world is present now, maybe coming in a little bit more, but really we've lost from our past is the idea of ritual and having ritual around transitions and around, I mean, that's kind of too what I'm coming from with my work, because we don't really have rituals for, you know, I remember when I was going to art school, I had a friend who had been a social worker, and in her 70s, she went back to art school and became an artist. And I was so in awe of this woman. And she, one of the things she told me about was she was doing these, Raku fired vessels.
Oh wow.
And one of the vessels that she did was like life-sized, and she put these four women on the outside, and she was making them for croning ceremonies.
Oh cool.
So she was such a cool person, but I just thought, and the whole idea of like the ritual way of making it, even like, because you put it under the earth. I don't know the exact word for that, but there's a way of firing clay where you put hot coals, dig a big pit, and then you fire it that way. But then this beautiful vessel, which also was kind of burnt and cracked, you know, it wasn't perfect.
Right.
So I thought that was a really beautiful thing. I've been thinking about, you know, the women, the age of women I work with, mid to late life. I've been thinking about the word crone a lot lately. You know, what does that mean? What does it mean to be coming into being a crone? And that, I think I hadn't, when I met her, I hadn't thought about that really. I was younger than two. But just making that reverence of becoming a crone, you know, like owning that, like not seeing that as a critical word.
No, I totally understand. I wonder if that's like one of the reasons so many women loved Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh, yes.
because she seemed to, I don't know, she just seemed like this really cool, admirable, like, woman who was not only really had accomplished so much professionally, but she just seemed like really the person like you want as your grandmother or as your mother.
Yeah, it's wonderful to find them. Always drawn, actually, since I was young, as a young child, as an adolescent, I was always drawn to older women for some reason. And I just would have these connections. And I remember having the connection with my grandmother's, my mother's mother and my father's mother. But that continues for me. And it's like looking now, it's more looking for role models. Like you say, looking for role models and how do I want to be?
I think so. Like, I think in our culture, again, I think men and women, I don't think it's like men have it better necessarily. But I do think for women, there is sort of this whole thing of like, when you're no longer fertile, you know, you can no longer have children, you lose your looks, quote unquote. There's kind of a question of what use am I?
Mm-hmm. You become invisible almost. I've heard people.
And I think that is such a extraordinarily painful experience to have. I know that one of the things that brought me into ancestral healing was when my father died, and for whatever reason, all of a sudden, I just felt sort of like I'm the elder now, and I did not feel qualified to be an elder. I didn't feel qualified to be much of anything. I felt sort of like I had my career, and now that's kind of felt like it was over. I didn't know it was next for me. Mm-hmm. I was really depressed. Really depressed, kind of feeling a fair amount of despair. And that was really what set me on this whole journey.
Mm. That's a very familiar story to me that people work with. And yeah. But seeing that as, it sounds like for you was too, like a jumping off point, it becomes that, even though it didn't feel like that at all.
I didn't
feel like that all the moment. But
no, I had no idea where I was going. I was really... I mean, that was a golden thread thing, you know, just kind of felt like I'm just going to follow whatever the next thing is that feels inspiring to me and see where it takes me. And this is where it took me, or this is where it's taking me. There was a question I wanted to ask you about. Could you speak a bit more about the class that you're doing? I'm really sort of curious about, like, you know, what's the process that you take your students through? Mm-hmm. And what are some of the outcomes that they have?
Well, it's on a couple different levels. I've never been, partly because of my art therapy training, I've never been one to say, this is how you make something, but I give them a framework and patterns of how to make a doll. And it's a soft sculpture doll, although some of them do it differently. But then over the course of the course, I talk about different aspects of the shadow and going deeper and deeper into the shadow from various angles. And looking at, it's sort of dancing with the shadow in a way, because even though we don't think of it, maybe we don't think that we do this, it's hard to not look at it in a negative way, like it's scary or it's, I don't want to.
Yeah. Can you give an example of what that might be like?
Well, yes, I was working with one woman who, I think she would be okay with my saying, she had an image of, for one of her shadow symbols, because it's sort of like you're doing on one side. Mm-hmm. It we're working with flip dolls, which are two, the skirt connecting the two. So there is this kind of idea of opposites, which at first feels like they're not connected. They're these completely opposite things. Mm-hmm. But I think over the course of the class, it becomes more and more connected, and things seem to shift. Forth. Uh-huh. So women who start with an image that of a scary creature, a monster, and it's like, this is a scary monster and this is my shadow. Uh-huh. And then as they work with it, they start to see, oh, you know, this is actually my ally. Like this quality of this monster has something that I need, and it it's fierce for me, it fights for me, and it helps me to find a voice. And I didn't see that before.
Yeah, that's really like that's a really profound, you know, realization to have.
Yeah, so it's kind of moving from us them other kind of yeah. way of thinking and towards unity and connectedness and a world where things sort of morph and shift as they go along. And so part of the surrender process as you work with it is letting go of an idea of what you're going to be making. Because I work with people who've done a lot of, one woman who had several people have a lot of expertise as artists mm-hmm. or as working with fiber art. And then mm-hmm. they want to have this, an idea in the beginning. And then they yeah. realize, oh, well, it's better to not have the idea and to just start with whatever comes up and keep working with it. And then
I like that.
Let it evolve as you go along.
Yeah. I like
that's
that a
another lot. Way of surrendering.
Yeah. That you come up with something really, I'm sure like that just the outcome is to me, that's a very powerful way to create an outcome.
So that's why I call it befriending our shadow. Cause
yeah.
It's like becoming a friend.
Yeah.
And so it's the shadow is by Jung's definition, it's a part of us that's disowned that we don't want to mm-hmm. see. We see it as, you know, we've been judged about it. This is a quality that we feel somebody has said it was unacceptable yeah. for some reason, or we make it unacceptable.
Yeah.
And so the process of reclaiming it and owning it and finding what it is, sort of finding the gold, like you said, the golden thread, a lot of times talking about finding the gold within. So yeah. I lead them in guided visualizations where they would go, meet their shadow in a guided visualization and oh, open cool. a door and find what's behind this door and what object is there. And it's often these very golden or lit or crystals or things like that that
I like that
provide them with vision. And it's also looking at seeing in the dark in a way. It's like when you can't see in the way in the day-to-day world, you have to kind of develop this night vision where you can see and it's not just then seeing with your eyes but seeing with all your senses. And somehow one of my classes right now, we're talking a lot about the octopus.
Oh wow.
Octopus has become this metaphor for seeing in the dark and seeing and the octopus can morph and
yeah
spread through tiny cracks and
right
and it looks kind of monstrous at first, but it's really
yeah
yeah
that's a really really excellent symbol. It's really good, befriending your inner octopus.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be a whole course.
It could be.
That's funny.
So what do you out of curiosity, like what feels like the most challenging for you right now? And it could be personal, professional, but like the way I kind of hold it is when there's something like you really want to create and it feels sort of like something, you know, like it's either this is lacking and I need to create it, or this is an obstacle and I need to find a way to deal with it. Those are a couple of ways you could hold it. So what for you is, you know, feeling really challenging?
Well, a couple of things. One of them is I really like Anne Lamott, the writer Anne Lamott. She talks, she just writes a lot about accepting ourselves with all our messiness and incompleteness. And she wrote a book called Bird by Bird, where just looking at things. I'm not going to go into the whole bird by bird thing, but anyway, she once said, her mind can be a dangerous neighborhood. And for me, that's how I feel sometimes. Like I still can be very critical of myself and have that voice. I think that's one of my challenges still. And I think that's, again, teach what you need to learn. A lot of the working with the shadow is kind of working with and trying to and embracing those sides of ourselves that want to come in and be critical and judge, you know, this isn't the way, like, it's not the way I pictured it. It's not coming out the right way kind of thing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's really hard. You know, like one of the crafts I do is painting and I'm still relatively new to it. You know, I used to paint a lot when I was young and then I totally stopped for a really long time and now I'm doing it again. So in a way I'm learning again and it really like, I'm really harsh with myself when I make mistakes. Like when I have an intention for something to look one way and it just doesn't work out. Like the paint's not cooperating, or I made a mistake somewhere along the way. And
paint has a way of doing that.
Yeah, it's a booger. I think about who's that artist, the guy who used to talk about like happy mistakes, or Bob Ross. And he would talk about like that idea of like happy mistakes or something like that. And I keep thinking like, man, I wish I could get myself in that place of like, oh, this is a, you know, this is a fortunate mistake or something.
Yeah. That's why I like this new way of painting that. Well, it's not really new. It's like I rediscovered it, of just creating these messes, like using colors you don't like and just kind of messing around on the paper or the canvas, and then letting it dry and finding imagery in it.
Wow.
It's almost taking a mistake and making it into something. So you've already made the mistake, and then you work into it and find the image.
I think that would be like a really good practice for me.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded like working with Rorschachs, but it's the way my mind works anyway. I always was the one who looked at the clouds and would see the faces in the sidewalk and see, you know, oh, that looks like a whatever.
So you were saying, so that was like one of the things that you were talking about.
I just have an idea, and then I have another idea and another idea. And it's like so many ideas, and
right.
So much, like having to corral them and say, okay, you can't do all these things. You have to just pick something
right,
and go with it. And
it's hard. I get it. I do get it. Yeah, so like
one of the biggest challenges.
So like other things that you find challenging or particularly challenging at this point?
I just lost the connection for a second.
Oh, okay. So we're talking about challenges, obstacles, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And anything else that like you feel kind of kicks your butt?
Well, I am somebody who is more of an introvert. So yeah. I feel like I think of myself as a reluctant workshop leader, because I think that's why I kind of in some ways left art therapy, because it was just so challenging having to be not as much with the clients, but having to kind of always teach the people I was working with and almost sell it to them. Like, this is what art therapy
is. Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I was like, no, I'm going to just do my own art. I'm just going to go into my studio and close the door. But I kept getting drawn back to, you know, to teaching, and it's challenging for me I'm better than I used to be, but sometimes it takes me a day to recover after I've done, you know.
Yeah.
I find it exhausting. I don't as much get energy it is wonderful, but it's like, oh my God, I'm exhausted after I.
I find I'm a very hardcore introvert, and I find it really challenging. It's I think the thing that's really hard about being an introvert, it's not even the fact, like, I've kind of gotten over the fact that, like, I'm awkward with people that I don't know at, like, big unstructured things. But what my challenge is a lot of the time is that I care deeply about people. You know, my relationships with my friends and family and just people who are doing things I think are cool, like, that's the main joy in my life. You know, that's my thing.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, I have to be extremely mindful of how much I let in, because I will get, as you said, overwhelmed. I will have to take a day off. And that has been a really, really tricky thing to navigate.
Yeah.
That's because I feel like things would go so much faster if I was more outgoing and reached out more to people and to, you know, to draw them into what I'm doing. And it's just, that's not my wiring.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you find COVID a little bit easier? Like being able
to have that time?
Yeah, I know. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Somebody said
the other thing for me with the introversion thing is that I really live in a world of images, I think. And I had written this story once, and I created this whole universe around it with dolls and some series of books I did. This character that lives under the earth, and she's like really comfortable under the earth, and she has to come up above ground because she's called to do this work.
Oh wow.
And the light is just like, too much light.
That's how it feels. So,
a lot of my dolls are sort of like that. Like they're comfortable with this other kind of, like the other language almost, and having to speak the language of day-to-day talking and is more difficult.
Like they don't want to. Like, yeah, I understand that too. I think that's another aspect of introversion, is you have a preference. Like, I like to go deep with people.
Yes.
Which is why I like these conversations. It's like,
yes, yes.
We can, you know,
just
we
jump
can
jump right into the deep stuff. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I think it's okay to say this, but when I first met my mother-in-law, a few months later, she sent me an article on how to make small talk.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah. There was I took a class on creating your own tribe, which is like a real passion of mine. And that was one of the things that the instructors were encouraging us to do. It's like, oh, there's this really great book. It's on how to make small talk. And, you know, like I took it and it's like really great. And, you know, it's like, you know, I can, you know, if I have to talk to somebody about the weather, you know, I can
That's
do
my
it.
My dog, you know, getting ready to go out. He does this okay. little yodel okay. sound.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, we'll take a little break.
Yeah, we're wrapping up. It's okay. That's so funny. Yeah. So yes, a friend of mine actually said to me, I made the comment that I used to feel really bad about crossing the street when I saw another person coming at me. But now with COVID, it's totally like, that's like the responsible thing to do. And I don't have to feel bad about it anymore.
Right, right.
That's funny. You know, and it's like, that's the thing. It's like, it's not that I don't love you or that you're not a wonderful person. And it's just everything in my body is saying, like, too much.
Yeah.
You know, red light.
So interesting. Yeah,
so we can wrap up here, you know, if you want to get out and be with your dog and stuff. It looks like
no, he's taking him out. It's just funny, we adopted him in April, and he was on the street before, and he has some issues, but when he gets ready to go out, he does his yodels because he's so happy.
What's your dog's name?
His name is Eddie.
So Erica, this was like such a pleasure, you know. There are several topics I would love to go deeper with you. Perhaps another time.
Yes, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.